Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose life has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Satya Vedant. Satya Vedant holds a PhD from the University of Michigan and an MA from the University of Baroda in India. Satya Vedant is also an author and has held meditation workshops around the world, including the United Nations and the Pentagon. I'm so happy to have Satya Vedant on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Satya Vedant, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very good. I just want to make a little correction, Swami Swaram. In my introduction, you rightly mentioned I have a PhD from University of Michigan in education, and I have MA and PhD from University of Baroda in literature. So I have a PhD from Baroda and also from Michigan.
Absolutely. Okay, fair enough. Sorry, I dropped one of your PhD. Apologies.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Okay, to start, tell us, how did you feel first time you met Osho?
Well, I wish I had enough words to use because it was such a phenomenal experience, Swami Swaram. But I will try to be as brief and as short as possible, but it was, in brief, it was like his love and his energy was falling upon me like a Niagara fall, you know, falls on you. In that way, he just showered himself so totally. This was way back in 1975, 11 January 1975, when he initiated me into sannyas. So the experience was, of course, beyond description, but to say very briefly, his love, his energy was overflowing me. That's all I can say.
Okay, thank you very much. And then that was, you mentioned 1975. And did you stay then with Osho in Pune at the time, or you had to make a living and work and you were traveling between Pune and your work commitments?
No, at that time, I was in Chicago. You know, after my PhD from Michigan, I was appointed as Director of Institutional Research at the City Colleges of Chicago. And I was the Director of Institutional Research. So from there, I took a leave. During those days in Pune, Swami Swaram, there used to be a 10-day meditation camp. So I wanted to attend that camp. So I took some leave from my work and I arrived in Pune on the 10th of January, and 11th of January was my first darshan at the evening satsang. So I was actually working in Chicago when I came and saw Osho in Pune.
How much time you spend in Pune?
I only took a very short leave to attend the camp and see Osho. I had to go back to Chicago, and then I was in Chicago from 75 to until about 76. I was in Chicago, and then I was appointed as a dean from 76 to, so I was a dean in San Francisco. There was an Institute of Asian Studies, and so I moved from Chicago to San Francisco until 79. In 1979, I received a message from Osho, from Ma Lakshmi, that I should now come to Pune, and so I resigned from my deanship, and I arrived in Pune in 1979. And from 1979 to 81, I was with Osho here in Pune. And then when 81, Osho came to America, I also left Pune and came to America. It's a continuous flow that has happened. But just to be very brief to answer your question, after my initiation in 75, I came back to Chicago, from there to San Francisco, and then again back to Pune in 1971. Till 81, and then 81, I came back to America, and then of course in 82, I came to Rajneeshpuram in Oregon, when Osho was in Oregon.
So that is quite remarkable that you have a very established and flourishing career. You were just appointed dean, and then Osho called you. You dropped everything and you left to be with Osho. Quite remarkable.
Thank you.
So I am aware that you were appointed by Osho as Chancellor of the Osho Multiversity, at the time known yes. as the Rajneesh International Meditation University. And I remember yes. the first time when I went to Pune, it was 1999, and the first time I came across this Osho Multiversity, and I wasn't sure what was it. And, you know, I was studying philosophy, and I remember asking the sannyasin who was giving me a tour. I said, you know, I want to learn everything. Where do I start? I want to study. What is this multiversity? And he said, you are completely misunderstood. There is nothing to study here. It's about meditation. It's about inner consciousness, inner growth. So, you know, because you were the chancellor, what was Osho's vision when creating the multiversity? If you can explain what it was about.
Very beautiful. I will have to be very selective in answering, because Osho has put a lot of heart and energy into this whole field of what we call quote-unquote education. I'll give a very interesting example, Swaram. When we were in Rajneeshpuram, Osho asked me and Ma Karuna, she was the vice chancellor of Osho Multiversity, to be with him, to sit with him. And there was, I think, only the third person there was probably Sheila was there, I don't remember. But I and Karuna were there, and Osho spoke his vision of education for 45 minutes. He spoke. And he said that, he gave example that Bertrand Russell and many other people also tried to bring new understanding of education, but he says his vision is not just education, but transformation. Transformation through education. It is not just intellectual information passing on like a jug and mug. You pour water into the mug from the jug. It is to bring about a total revolution inside the human person who is there in front. And that is where his contribution is so remarkable, because education for me is to make the individual complete, not only complete intellectually, but emotionally and spiritually. That a complete human being can take place only through right education. So education for him was a more of an experiential process than only intellectual. Not that he was against intellect. Intellect can be used and has to be used. But the final point of participation in an educational process is to bring about a total transformation. And that is why, as you may have noticed, in Multiversity, if I remember correctly, once upon a time, we used to have about 100 processes. We used to call them processes. And they were all on different levels, the level of the body, of the mind, emotion, and consciousness. And then they were all given an opportunity for the person to grow step by step into all these dimensions. So it was a very, what can I say, it was a very wide, universal, multidimensional vision that Osho presented to us in terms of education.
That's beautifully explained, and I think Osho himself is a brilliant example of a genius. You know, intellectually he's a giant. I don't know anyone who can beat Osho from a reasoning, philosophical point of view, but then at the same time he was totally transformed as a human being. You know, he's pure love and compassion, so that's a great example to look at. And in terms of the multiversity, were you involved or responsible, or did you contribute in the creation of the programs that were offered in the commune?
Osho gave me this guidance. He said, Vedant, you just go and sit in these groups, just sit somewhere by yourself and watch whatever is happening. The group facilitator would carry on his or her process, and I was only to be there, just being there. And then he asked me to present if there is anything that he needs to guide in terms of my observation, I could share that with him. And my another role was to remain as kind of quote-unquote as an advisor. In case somebody needs some information, something more to know, then I should be available to people, to anywhere. I was not what we call involved in the nitty-gritty of the multiversity. I think Ma Karuna was more into it. My role was to be present, to be there, and to be available. And Osho would then connect with individually or in a group process with the group facilitators or with the entire group. That was his decision. But for me, he said, you just be there if somebody wants to consult, talk to you, remain available. That's all I can say.
I'd like to understand more about the process of creating the program. So from what I'm hearing from you, the group facilitators were doing their own things, and then you were there just as a presence, and then Osho would then meet the group leaders and kind of guide them. I'm just trying to picture, was Osho directing the people on the way they were meant to create the groups, or it was more a spontaneous happening and Osho would just guide them, you know, like, and just want to understand how that the groups were created.
No, only when needed, he would guide. Oftentimes, I heard from group facilitators that, my God, we learned the technique, but the real crux we learned only from Osho, what it all meant, whatever the process was. So if, let us say, they have any more, they need more insight into their work. Mostly it was in a group process that Osho would invite either group leaders or the entire group. And within that group process, he would discuss that issue that was brought to the group facilitator's attention. And he would give whatever guidance that was necessary so that the group facilitator and the participants can benefit the maximum from the entire work or entire operation, entire process that they were all involved in. His presence was only when needed, not otherwise. He would not sit down and call everybody every day or give any instructions or anything, nothing like that. Only if required, and only if somebody reaches to him and says, Bhagwan, this is what we would like to know, or we are not clear, then he would make that effort to invite and bring his insight to their attention.
Great. So jumping forward ahead to more recent days, I know that you have been instrumental in creating Osho Chair in Gujarat. And first time I heard about that, I was really like, wow, this is really amazing. This is great. This is exactly what we need to do. So I would love to hear from you if you can explain a little bit more what this Osho Chair is about.
First of all, if you know India, in Gujarat, there is a place called Surat. It is about, 80 miles, or no, 120 miles north of Mumbai, I believe. And that is where we have a center called Osho Lotus Meditation Center. And sannyasins are very active, very involved into Osho's work. So the vice chancellor of what is known as South Gujarat University was very open, very welcoming to Osho and his vision. So I went and had a long meeting, a talk with him and so on. And I proposed that since you are so welcoming to Osho's vision, we would like to establish an Osho chair so that Osho can be also made available in an academic environment and can give students, young people, young students, an opportunity to become aware, to learn from his vision and his work. So this vice chancellor, he was very supportive, and he and our Osho Lotus Center and the Osho World Foundation here in New Delhi, we collaborated into this process, and it was inaugurated on January 21st or 22nd in 2017, if I was just 1 year ago, 2017. And it was a very gala event, very, very, very well participated. So the point is that the Osho Chair, at this point, we have in last almost 2 years, we have presented a lot of workshops, a lot of presentations of Osho's vision, his work on different aspects, parenting, for example, stress management, for example, how to deal with our emotional wellness, meditation, working together, how to work together, how to relate, how to be an individual, and so on. Osho has given hundreds of insights into all these matters. So we have, in this last 2 years, presented in various colleges, because it's a cluster of colleges around the university in Surat, various colleges, different talks on different topics involving interaction with the young students and also of the faculty at the same time. And in that interaction and that workshop process, many students were very much touched and they felt connected, and more they wanted to come and participate in Osho's meditation, which they started coming to Osho Lotus Meditation Center and become part of whether dynamic meditation or Kundalini, whenever they are able to do it, they started becoming connected with the Osho Lotus Meditation Center. So the point is that we have developed different modules and we have just started working on the first two modules, the individual, first of all, and relationship, relating with parents, with family, with friends. In that sense, we have developed more and more programs. And we are eventually going to now develop a whole curriculum so that we can then start making it a certificate or a diploma or certificate program. But that will take time. We have to just build up slowly. We have a coordinator from the Gujarat University who works with us together as a team. Our coordinator from our center and that coordinator from the university, we work together in building up and trying to build up this program. So it is going to take a while before we actually make it as a certificate or a diploma program or a degree program. Step by step we are working on, but we are getting very encouraging and very positive support from the university, from the faculty and from the students.
Perhaps the main aim of this podcast, the Love Osho podcast, is to show Osho's contribution to the development of human consciousness. And obviously you made a huge effort to make Osho available through the Osho chair and also to make Osho understood and recognized as a genius, as an intellectual giant, at the same time a mystic and spiritual master. So I really deeply respect and appreciate your effort in this direction. And also I hear that many of the programs and the curriculum, it's in relation of helping people in real life, parenting, relationship. So what is, in your view, Osho's relevance today?
Osho was never more relevant than he is today. A master, a spiritual master, is always and universally relevant, Swami Swaram. But today, I believe that there's a lot of, this is my perception, everyone may not agree, but there's a lot of state of confusion in people's minds because there are so many pressures, so many stresses, so much what you call misunderstandings about what life is all about, that people are trying to see a light. They want to find out a way out of this kind of a totally lost space that they feel themselves in. Universally, throughout the centuries, my understanding is that all spiritual masters were very much helpful precisely at such moments. And there have been many times such moments of darkness, you may call it, such moments of confusion, you may call it. And so it is the same moment today. And in that context, I believe that there is hardly any field, any area, any vocation, any job, any sector, any dimension that does not require such a clear, such a rejuvenating, powerful, positive, energetic support as it is being given, has been given, or Osho is giving right now. So, to answer your question briefly, Osho is relevant today because the life is so confusing, people are feeling so lost, they feel alienated, they feel completely misguided. So, the clarity, and not only clarity, Osho has not only given that, he has also given devices. His devices are very enormously powerful. His meditations, hundreds and hundreds of meditations, his 650 books, his thousands of audio video discourses, you name it. He has not only spoken about what it should happen, but how it can happen, and he has given us the devices, the methodology, the technique, so that we can take each step forward and grow with that each step. So it's an enormously relevant presence. That is what Osho is, enormously relevant presence today. Not only in terms of his insight, but in terms of methodology, in terms of devices, so that one can practice, experience individually as well as collectively.
So say someone is listening, or, you know, many young people in India or everywhere in the world getting interested in Osho. There are so many books available, there are so many videos, as you said, but Osho is no more in the body. So how is possible for someone who is interested in Osho to follow a spiritual path with a master who is no more in the body today?
First thing is, that is, if I am available, if I, as an individual, available, if I am totally, completely available, the master is available. It is my availability that is important, not whether he is in the body or not. He is. And he has given many assurances of this kind, that even though I may not be in the body, yet I am going to be there. I'll be available. I am available. He has made himself available universally. It is not just he was only confined. He said, I was confined in the body because that is how it was. But even though I may not be in the body, if you want to reach out to me, if you want to connect with me, if you want to be with me, I am available. I am there. We should not have this idea that he is no longer there. That is my Swaram, that is my personal experience I'm sharing with you. And in that sense, I think that if somebody is really interested, one can connect by reading his books, by following his meditations, listening to his discourses, or participating in various meditation centers, meeting sannyasis, meeting friends, having a one-to-one understanding of how Osho sannyasins have learned, how they have changed, how they have experienced so many beautiful things. That can give them an assurance that yes, maybe they can also find some way out. So to answer your question, first thing is that he is here, he has always been here, and he is always going to be here. If I am available, if the person is available, the master is always available. That is a fact. And so in that sense, my feeling is that only a person requires to have that passion. Osho has said somewhere, the ultimate love is between the master and the disciple. There is no love which is greater than that. That's the ultimate. That's the crescendo. That's the ultimate. So in that sense, if one falls in love with Osho and is really available to learn, to understand, and to live Osho's message, then I believe Osho is here. He has not left us, and he is not going to leave us, because that is his assurance. He has said that many, many times, that I am going to be with you. If you want to be with me, I am available. I am always there.
Well, that is so clear and loud and very beautifully put. And I also like the emphasis that you are shifting the responsibility, if you like, from Osho to us. You know, it's up to us, really. It's not about Osho. Osho is there. He's there. And, you know, we need to be open to receive him. And he's always ready to give. So I like that perspective. So thank you. And you mentioned also that it's important for people to connect with Osho via the books that are available, the discourses, and also the communes and the places and the sannyasins, and many sannyasins who are still around, many who have met Osho, but even new sannyasins who nonetheless are totally in love with Osho. So would you like to give us an overview of what's happening in India, especially? But you travel all over the world, but what do you see in India in terms of understanding Osho's reception of Osho's message, and how many, you know, if there are new generations getting interested in Osho, and if there are centers or places available there, and also perhaps because you have experience traveling everywhere in the world, if you see the same trend happening in Europe and in America?
That's a very good question, Swaram. I'm glad you asked. I will give you the whole picture as I see today. I do, yes, travel around. What is happening is amazingly, but that is what he has said that is going to happen. More and more young people I see participating in Osho's meditations. When I am facilitating a meditation camp, and even when other people facilitate meditation camp, I have observed that almost 80%, more than 80% of participants are between the age group of almost, let us say, 25 to about 35 or 40. 80%. Only 20% are of the senior age, beyond 50, 60, and so on and so forth. That is the first reality. The second reality is that now couples are coming. Previously, in my observation, I've been with Osho for the last 43 years. Previously, my observation was that maybe the man would come, take interest in Osho, participate, but his wife would not accompany him. Or reverse, a woman would come, participate, listen to Osho, but the husband won't join. But now, husband and wife, the couple comes and participates in meditation and wants to be part of Osho's vision of whatever work that is happening. That's beautiful. So young couples are coming. That's the second part. The third part is that in India, in particular, I stay here in Delhi, Osho World, known as Osho Dham, and I observe that more and more professionals are coming. More and more doctors, engineers, businessmen, of course, but bureaucrats from various government agencies, lawyers, this kind of professional world, which previously used to stay away from this spiritual, let us say, quote-unquote work, or from Osho for that matter, they are now coming. I see every day, so I was just talking to a couple of lawyers just right now at my breakfast. I came across a doctor a couple of days, a lawyer, a lady who is a law professor. She was there. So my point is that more and more professionals and what we call working people in higher echelons and higher levels of life, they are now coming and taking interest in Osho. And the fourth thing is that more and more new centers are happening in India. I know other parts of the world as well, but in India, so many good centers are happening and been a beautiful places and are being run, are being taken care of so nicely, and people are participating because not everyone can fly all the way to Delhi, for example, or to go any other big center. So when they come to know that there is a smaller center close by somewhere, they are very happy to go, and they go and they participate. So these are the four things that I have observed. One thing is that more and more young generation is coming to Osho to learn and to understand and to grow. More and more couples are coming. More and more professionals are coming. And more new centers are emerging.
Well, that's all wonderful news, you know, all of them. You know, the young people, the professionals, the number of people interested, the centers growing. And so it seems like India is a fertile terrain now, and it's getting ready to receive Osho. And how does India compare to the rest of the world, you know, in your experience? Of course, you're based in India, but you do travel, you do talk to people, you do conduct meditation camps in different parts of the world. Have you seen the same trend in Europe and America?
Solan, the first thing is that I have not really traveled to Europe, although I have traveled in all these about, say, 20, 25 years, 13 different countries. Most of my, I spend my time in United States and in Canada. And lately, last 2-3 years, I have not gone out of India because my health didn't permit me. So I have been confined to being in India and traveling around here. So I cannot really say firsthand any comparative view how it's happening in India and how elsewhere. I just hear news from people when they come from different places or somebody goes and visits, that the centers are indeed various places are very active, and more and more Osho's message is reaching out to people. But Swami, I'm not in a position to make any observation on a comparative basis. I'm sorry, I cannot do that. I can only speak at this moment as to what is my experience in India itself.
No, absolutely, fair enough. But in terms of Europe, I know that there is a festival happening in Portugal that started maybe, you know, 5-10 years ago and is growing every year. There is something happening in Spain. Of course, Italy is huge. There is a big Osho festival once a year, and there are, like, I don't know how many centers. There is Osho Niasto, which is alive and vibrant, and I know in Israel, Osho is really popular. They do as well a yearly festival and many other activities. So there is lots going on. And obviously in Osho Risk in North Europe, things are happening. In Germany, things are happening. It's beautiful. And I know that in America as well. I know Milarepa has been involved in opening a Osho Meditation Center in New York, which is great. And I'm sure more things that I personally not even aware of. So that's all good news.
I'm very thrilled to know this, Swami Saram. I'm really thrilled to know how wonderful festivals are happening and how more and more Osho is reaching out to people. I'm very thrilled. Thank you for sharing. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. So tell us a bit about your current activities and your project. So what are you working at the moment?
Well, first of all, I am here in Osho Dham in Osho World Foundation here in Delhi. And I, of course, present a meditation camp. I just finished one on Osho New Sannyas Meditation Camp a few days ago. I remain available for counseling if people have any questions about meditation, about anything, any personal issues. I remain available. I travel around and also give and also facilitate my meditation camp. But basically, I also translating Osho's book from Hindi to English, which is what I have been doing all these years. Because on my, it's a long story, but on my visit to Osho in 1975, I had three very significant darshans, meetings with Osho. So on the second darshan, I had translated a few pages from the Bhagavad Gita, Osho's Hindi Bhagavad Gita, into English, and had sent to Ma Lakshmi to show it to Osho. Osho, in that darshan, said, "Your translation has come out very well. So now this is your work. Translate my books from Hindi to English and English to Hindi." And so I have been doing, I have translated Osho's books from Hindi to English, and I'm currently also translating. So that is another my major work, besides traveling, presenting meditation camps, and this translation that I have been doing since I met him in 1975.
That's great to hear, because as far as I am aware, there are many discourses of Osho in Hindi that have not been translated yet. What kind of time frame are the discourses that you are translating those books? Are they late 60s, early 70s?
Yeah, I will tell you. My first book, I was at the ranch at Rajneeshpuram, and Osho had asked Swami Ananda Maitreya, the late Swami Ananda Maitreya, enlightened Swami Ananda Maitreya, he gave him a book to translate, and he gave me another book. He gave me a different book to translate from Hindi to English. And the translation, the title of that book is Now and Here on Death, Dying and Past Lives. That's the title of the book, and Now and Here. I translated a few articles of his before in newspapers and all that. But this was a book that he asked me at the Rajneeshpuram to begin with. And then he asked me to translate his discourses on Kabir. And the translation and the book, translated book name is The Fabric of Life, Songs of Mystic Kabir. These are all late 60s, early 70s talks that I got an opportunity to translate. I also translated his discourse on education. It's called Revolution in Education. The name of the type book is Revolution in Education. Then I also translated two chapters from the Bhagavad Gita, Hindi Bhagavad Gita, into English, which is known as War and Peace, two chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And currently, I'm translating a book which is titled as Wholesome Politics. Politics has become such a dirty thing, and he has given marvelous insight as to how we can make a healthy political environment, how a country can be healthy by having a healthy politics, a wholesome politics. So that is currently I'm working on. But the previous, of course, yes, you are absolutely right. The previous discourses were late 60s, early 70s discourses, if I remember correctly. And that is absolutely the fact. That is true.
Beautiful. I really look forward to reading your translation. And what you're doing is invaluable, because I personally have come across Osho through a book. and I know many, many other people who have got to know Osho because, you know, reading books. So translation of books, I think personally it's something that's wonderful, and I really appreciate what you're doing. It's amazing. So Satyavedanta, we are heading towards the end, and before we finish the interview, I've got three final questions for you. So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
I wake up just about the same time the dynamic starts, about 6, 6:30. I get up and I take a shower and have a cup of tea. Then I just check my messages and then go for breakfast. After breakfast, I sit in meditation for an hour. After breakfast, I then come back to my computer, I answer emails, I get received emails from different parts of the world, I answer them, and then I start working on this translation. This is how it goes on. In the meantime, if there are counseling sessions scheduled, then I go downstairs and I have counseling sessions with them. If not, then I come back to my room and stay here. Sometimes people want me to sit down in a group and have questions about, let's say, Osho or whatever it has in mind. Then maybe I take a time after lunch or during the tea time, I sit down with them. Osho is so compassionate, so kind, so loving that he takes care of me. Every moment he's there with me and he takes care of me. Nothing I can put in words that can express my joy, my gratitude to my beloved master. Nothing. There is no way. So the point is that I'm very happy that I am part of this wonderful, blessed process.
Thank you. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
If you're asking me in general, out of all Osho's meditations, I would say Nada Brahma is my favorite meditation. Nada Brahma. Personally, I do what we may call witnessing, watching breath, sitting silently for 1 hour. That is all I practice. Watch my breath, watch my thoughts, witnessing. In general, witnessing meditation for 1 hour. I sit and I just watch. And that brings my whole body and whole system to a such a wonderful deep sense of relaxation and silence that it just simply rejuvenates me to jump into my daily work.
So the last question is, you lead the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating the new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
Whether today or yesterday or tomorrow, it is the fundamental thing is, am I there? Am I here? It is not a question of what I do. The question is, how do I do it? You know, in Shakespeare, Hamlet, the question is raised, to be or not to be is a question. If you would have asked Osho, he would say that is not the question. The question is how to be and how not to be. And that is where awareness comes in. So if you ask me today or yesterday or tomorrow, the fundamental thing is, am I aware? Am I here? What am I doing? Why am I doing the way I'm doing? To be aware of our unawareness, to be constantly watching this mind and whatever is happening, and with a sense of acceptance, the sense of tremendous acceptance and gratitude. Acceptance and gratitude that whatever I am receiving. You see, the thing is that we always ask more than what we need, and Master always gives enough. As much as you need, not more, not less, enough. So the question is, how do I do it? Am I doing it well? And this is where the whole test of being a disciple is, of being with the master is, how do I do it? And in that sense, I can share with you a very sweet short story, if you allow me. There was a young man in Iran. He was, once upon a time, was wanting to go to see a Sufi fakir, a Sufi enlightened master. And he was quite, you know, he was very excited. He was jumping around, getting ready, getting prepared. So his roommate, his friend said, okay, all right, you go and see the Sufi master, but why are you so excited? Why are you jumping around? What is it that he is going to give you? He said, it is not that I am going there to get something. I am just going to see there how he ties and unties his shoelaces. That's all I am going to see. How he ties and unties his shoelaces. His presence, his silence, his non-mechanical way of what he is doing, his being. That's all I'm going to see. I don't have anything to get from him. I just want to watch him, how he is doing it. And that is the crux of the matter. How am I doing it? And that is where we have to constantly be aware, as Osho says, watch yourself, watch your mind. Watching the mind is the biggest meditation in my experience that ever can be. Watching the mind. And mind is very cunning, as Osho says. It can rationalize, it can justify anything in the world. And this is where meditation and awareness, all this beautiful insight that Osho has given, are so relevant today. And they have always been, they shall always be. As long as human consciousness is on the surface of Earth, Osho's message of awareness, consciousness, is always going to be relevant. Because we need it, whether yesterday, today, or tomorrow. And so I am very blessed that I have learned this, and I am learning, and I am trying to live with that. Once it so happened that in a satsang, one of the Indian sannyasin asked, Bhagavan, you know what, in our Indian culture, there are three debts we have to pay. One debt is to our mother. Well, she gives birth, she takes care, she raises us, she is so kind, I bow down to her, and I am indebted to her. My another debt is to my father. He looks after me, he takes care of me, he protects me, he gives me whatever is needed. I am very grateful to him. My second debt is to my father. And my third debt is to my spiritual master, my guru. Because he takes care on every level, on all different levels, physical, material, emotional, psychological, spiritual, you name it. He is always there to help. He is always there. It is his blessing and his help that makes things happen for me. So how do I pay my debt to my guru? And Osho smiled and he said, just simply live my teachings and you have paid your debt. Don't even wait to thank me. Simply live what I'm telling you and you have paid your debt. That is where the crux of the matter is. Am I living his message? That is the relevant part. Am I living him? Talking is very easy. I can give a whole talk and I can explain to you, oh, he has said this and he says that and he has, yes, but what is happening to you? Where are you? Are you there? Osho says that Ramana Maharshi used to give this mantra, who am I? Ask this question, who am I? Osho would say, in Tibetan tradition, they used to another question. The question was, where am I? Where am I? Am I there? Am I here? Am I present? So this is what I have learned. I'm sharing with you. I'm sorry it was a little lengthy answer. Sorry.
No worries at all. And it's with deep, deep gratitude that I salute you. And thank you for sharing your experience, your love for Osho. And you know, I'm really amazed and I really appreciate what you're doing for Osho and for, you know, for all of us, all the people who need Osho, and you are doing some incredible work.
Can I just interrupt 1 second, sir? I want to first also express my very deep gratitude for your giving me this opportunity of sharing. So thankful to you. Please accept my gratitude. Second thing is, I would like to express my gratitude to all the listeners, all the Osho lovers, all Osho friends, for this opportunity for me to share with them whatever Swami Swaram asked me. And the third thing is, if you would please make sure how and when I will be able to listen to this and how I will be able to share if somebody else wants it. Thank you very much, Swaram. I really appreciate it. So kind of you.
Thank you, Sadhya Vedanta. It's been a real pleasure connecting with you and talking to you. And I actually just now remember that I met you in person, but you may not remember. It was many, many years ago in Rishikesh. You were conducting a meditation camp in Osho Dam near by Ganga River. And I was there, so I met you briefly during those, you know, 2-3 days camp there. It was a wonderful experience, very powerful and very, very strong energy. So I'd love to have another meditation camp with you.
Thank you.
And lots of love and thanks for your time.
Thank you for listening to the Love Out Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveoutshow.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.